Honestly Unbalanced.
Welcome to episode 107 of Honestly Unbalanced, where we chat to more people that have tried to make your life a little bit better. And this week we're chatting to award-winning actress, renowned for her roles of Karma McQueen on Hollyoaks and Rebecca on Coronation Street. That is Gemma Myrner. If you're not from the UK, they're two of the biggest UK soaps. But not only does she act, she's transformed into kind of a multifaceted powerhouse. She's a hypnotherapist, a life coach, a wellness expert, founder of the wellness platform Mind and Wellness, and also podcast by the same name. She's an awesome and inspiring person. And on this chat, we talk about helping women find their power, overcoming self-sabotage, how to use vision boards and manifestation techniques, balancing performance and authenticity as a yoga teacher, what is intuitive psychology, and how to trust yourself. Before we get started, shout out first and foremost to Lifeform, the best yoga mats in the world from the best company. So if you want to fall on your face a little bit less and want a mat that's kind to the planet, then check out Lifeform. And with code HUSLER10, all caps, HUSLER10, you get 10% off, or it just helps add to a sale, whatever sale they might have on at the time. And I love also Viva Barefoot. Viva Barefoot shoes are a way to connect to the world around you via your feet without looking too hippie. Like, at least where I live, going around barefoot isn't a look. So if you want to connect with the earth and give your feet a little bit more space, check out Viva Barefoot and code ADAMHUSLERVB for 10% off. I wear them, Holly wears them, our little boy wears them. They're awesome. And fancy joining Holly and I on a retreat in June? We head to Dorset. It's an incredible venue that has, well, we've got an amazing chef. It's going to be amazing food. We've got an ice bath, a sauna. Holly's doing sound healing, basically singing you to sleep every night. I'm doing yoga. There'll be meditation, beautiful countryside walks. Have a little peek at adamhustler.com/Dorset to find out more. It's going to be wicked. And if you use code HUSLER when you book or when you email to book, you can get £100 off. Anyway, it's time for you to listen to the podcast. But one more thing, if you enjoy it, please spread the word. Please tell people you enjoy it. Share it on your social media. It means so much to us. So please do that, because most podcasts spread organically. That's how they grow. So we need your help organically spreading. Now, listen to the podcast.
Honestly Unbalanced.
Like, what does that mean to you to find one's power?
Well, let me take you back. I was obviously on TV and I never felt like I was fully in my power. So I think that's what I mean by women finding the power. And it's took me 10 years of healing work, qualifications, learning more about myself and trusting myself fully and being like more my true authentic self, like unapologetically. And then now I feel like I am in my power. And I want to be able to help other women to do exactly the same. Because I think we've been brought up generational to be nice, say the right thing, only speak when you're spoken to, don't speak your truth. And I want women to like fully just stand in them and know how powerful they are and be really confident and go after every dream that they want in life so they don't have any regrets. You know, on the deathbed, like, oh, I wish I'd done that. I want people to fully stand in their power that way. So yeah, I think that's what I mean by it.
There is this extra layer, isn't there, though, because I think most women would say that they want that, but there's so much self-sabotaging going on. And I think a lot of the time women are actually, I mean, I'm speaking from my own experience, like I feel I know that I'm powerful, as we all do, but yeah, it's so hard to step into that sometimes, and it can be scary to shine really bright. So what are your thoughts on that, and have you struggled with that as well?
Massively. So fear is a big thing that comes up for many women. Like, they want to do stuff, but then this layer of fear comes up. But if I do this, this might change in my life. If I do this, people might say this about me. And yet it's completely come up in my life. Like, that's why I feel like, you know, in my 30s, like heading from like 28 to 35, I was not standing in my power. I wasn't doing things that I should have been doing. But that's where I've done the work of releasing that fear. I've had a lot of hypnotherapy as well, and I'm a practitioner now. And I think for me, that was absolutely incredible. And I remember having one session on success because I was trying to grow my business, mm-hmm. but I was stopping myself. Like, for some reason, I was stopping myself. And when we went in the hypnotherapy session around success, it was because I was scared of shining bright, because when I was younger, I got bullied of you too much. Mm-hmm. Oh, because I was an extrovert child. I was mm-hmm. a school child. So of course I was, you know, but you too much. And I never really fitted in with like a girl group type thing. So when I went in through hypnotherapy, it was that. And the reason why I was stopping my success is I wanted to try and fit in when I was a child. So I was able to release that through a lot of inner child work. And then obviously with coaching as well, has really helped me move forward to completely stand in my power.
Mm.
So do you think, so you said it's like a 10-year journey for you. And I read that you've now got your dream job, like back into...
Yeah, congratulations.
Yeah, congrats on that. So you're going to be on Coronation Street. And now you said that's your dream role. But you took kind of a bit of a gap from acting. And with that gap, because you didn't really feel like you were in your power, and the only way to find, or one of the ways to find that, was to step back from acting. Because I guess when you're acting, and I'm not an actor, I don't really understand it, but I guess you spend a lot of time being someone else. Mm. And yeah. I guess you have then less time to actually observe who you actually are.
Mm. You know who I was. I spent that much time being Carmel. Mm. Like, I joined the show when I was 23, and I was doing everything to get the job. So I was being her not only on set, but I was kind of being her out of it, because I think people expect you to be the character. Mm-hmm. I was being this polished, perfect version of me on a red carpet. And that loaded me up with so much anxiety, because I'm not polished. I'm not perfect. But I had this thing of being in the press. I have to be a certain way. And if you think about 15 years ago, the women in the press, they wasn't even allowed a hair out of place or a dress, because there was a story written of, like, oh, who wore it best? Oh, she didn't look great. That was a terrible outfit. So there was so much pressure that I think, you know, over the years of being there, I just morphed into kind of Carmel, and then this other version of me, and I didn't really know who Gemma was. And then my dad suddenly passed away. So I was on the show, I was 28. I just got married, and my granddad passed away a month after my wedding, basically to the day. Mm. We got back off honeymoon, and 5 days later, my dad passed away suddenly overnight through stress. He had a heart attack and died. And that was what completely changed my world. And I kind of wanted to leave before this had happened. And I remember speaking to my dad about it. But when my dad passed away, the easiest thing was just to stay for another 2 years, because I could play Carmel with my eyes closed. And I loved it dearly, but I felt like I needed to move on from the character to grow as a person. Because if you think you're in the same environment from 23, sometimes there's not enough breathing space to grow. You have to stay stuck. And for me, I'd kind of outgrown it. So yeah, I stayed for another 2 years, and it was really hard. My anxiety went horrendous. And yeah, I just kind of, then I was like, I need to step away from this. And that's when I stepped away from it. And I went and did my yoga teacher training, because I felt like that was the only space that I was allowed to grieve and be sad. And people accepted me as who I was. I didn't need to be anything or be anyone. And then that's how the yoga journey started, because I practiced from like when I was 18 and I loved it. And I was just like, I just want just some space and an easier life. And from the yoga, I went to meditation, to hypnosis, you know, to coaching. But again, it has been 10 years of healing and truly finding out who I am.
I was going to say, the yoga training community is actually really, it's an unusual place in life to do a training. Like, I'm not going to say this about the yoga community full stop, because there can be some like darker elements of it.
Yeah.
But when you're on a training, at least in all the ones I've experienced or the ones I've facilitated, you are in this group of people that actually don't care who you are, particularly in terms of your background. Mm-hmm. But you're all kind of supporting each other. You're all in it together. And it's as if everyone is on this like new step of a new life. And everyone is so open. I've just actually facilitated the first week of a teacher training.
Yeah.
And it's just 5 days, the first like intensive section. And everyone is so open. There were so many tears in a really like lovely way. There was so much support for each other. And it's very unique to find that in life. And I was actually telling them at the beginning, don't ask each other what you do for a living. That will come at some point. But for this intensive, try not to let that be part of the conversation you have. It's unique, isn't it?
And I think that's what I needed. I needed to not have any labels on me, because my identity was so wrapped up in that I was an actor and I was Carmel and I was on Hollyoaks. And my identity with that. So when I stepped away from that, like trying to find out who I was without it was really hard. You know, you've got to think that I had so many friends within the industry. And then that all goes when you leave, because it is one of those industries, like, you've got to be in it to be around. Yeah. And it's like, you know, you're not only just like stepping away from the job, you're losing a part of you. And then you're also losing people who, you know, you think are like your diehard friends, but they're not, which I think happens to most people between 20 and 30, isn't it? And it's about allowing things and people to just fall away, and that's okay. But I think, you know, there's a lot of learning when you hit your 30s and in your 30s of who you want to be. But yeah, I found the yoga, like I left the show, and you've got to understand, like we were so isolated. Like if we went and did a job in London, we'd get a train ticket, we'd have like a chaperone, you get on the train, you get took to the job, back on the train. You know, we didn't have much freedom, because you have to be careful, like with trust of people. So I then went on to Morocco with 26 people I didn't even know. And it was like, it was just so liberating. Like, I was like, this is just another world that I've never experienced. And yeah, I felt like I needed to do it for me to move forward with my life. Otherwise, I think I'd have been stuck.
Mm-hmm. And I guess being on a soap must be so different to other kind of acting jobs. In that, I imagine for most acting jobs, it's an intensive period. You do it, you get paid, it's over. Whereas I guess this is almost, is it every day?
Every day. And it can be like 70 hours a week. You can work like 14 days without a day off. You're with the same people. If you're in storyline with people, you're with those same people all the time. Like, and it's like a roller coaster. Like that, it's just like once you're on, you just got to keep going. You can't step.
So how do you feel about going back into it now? Are you in it, or are you about to go back in?
I've done two episodes in Coronation Street. But when I went back, I'm not going to lie, I did feel a little bit at home. I was like, I love soap. I do love that fast pace. I do love the fact that you get the script, you do it, and then it's done. And then you move on to the next thing. Like, I do love life like that because, like, I've gone and done plays and musicals, and when you've got to repeat it every night, that's when I get a little bit bored. Like, I do like things moving on quite quickly. So, and yeah.
This might be an obvious question, but do you feel that all the healing journey you've been on, all the inner work that you've done on yourself, do you think this is going to make you a much better actress?
Massively, yeah. Honestly, totally. When I walked on set this time, like before I went, I got up, I did my meditation that we have on our platform in Mind and Wellness. I did my courage one because I was like, I need a bit of courage today because I'm kind of stepping into a world that used to just be my world, but with fresh eyes, and I'm a completely different person than I was in my 20s. So yeah, I did. And then once I stepped on, I felt more confident. I'd done my prep and knew what I was doing. So I knew I could just bring what I wanted to for the character. And I felt really proud of that because my mindset from last time I was there, my mindset is completely different, and it's because of the work I've done on myself. Mm-hmm. So I was really kind of proud of myself for that.
And what is it Rebecca, your new role? And what is she like in comparison to Carmel? I have to say, first of all, I couldn't believe we were chatting to you. Adam said, oh, we're chatting to Gemma. And I looked you up and I said, oh my God, I got starstruck, and I had a little scream to myself because I just adored you so much. You were the best character in Hollyoaks. And I think I watched it up until you left and then I was done.
Oh, you know what? This time of my life, especially with doing Coronation Street, that's what I've just got back. Like, from yourself, from people on social media, when I went in, like, makeup girls, like, costume design, they were like, we used to run home from school and watch you. And I was like, it means so much, because the end of it was quite traumatizing for me, because I wasn't in a good place. Do you know what I mean? Like, I had to step away from a job I absolutely loved for my own mental health and to make sure I was okay. And I think now going back into it with such a stronger mindset, knowing all the tools, how to help me. I was really proud of it. But thank you for saying that, because it means a lot, because she meant a lot to me. It's a character that I built, you know, because she wasn't supposed to be in the show. I just went and we had like an open audition, and I went dressed as her. So I always based Carmel on Raquel from Coronation Street. That's how much of a fan of Corey I am. So I went dressed as her, and I just started to, on the scene, I just started talking like her, and the producer and the casting was like, we need to have her in the show. So then they written her in, and I spent some time with like the writers and the producers to develop the character. So yeah, she was never going to be in it.
I'm a bit oblivious. What kind of character was she?
Oh, she was like just so fun. Sweet, and sweet.
Blonde, like, just kind of like such a big heart.
Oh, okay.
Comedy. If you ever watch Coronation Street in its original days, like Raquel Welsh, that's who she was.
Okay, yeah. And I did see that you won the Comedy Award. So I presumed it was a kind of a funnier character.
It was. So, she was just absolutely brilliant. And that's what I've got. Everyone's gone, I hope Rebecca's like Carmel, but she's not.
What's she like?
So Rebecca, she's a CEO of a company, strong, leads her own path, and she doesn't mind taking, like, you know, she doesn't take herself too seriously. And I feel like Rebecca's more me. Like, I really feel like I've found a character that is like me, and I can bring so much to her. And I just loved like playing like a really strong woman on the day.
That's so interesting.
Does that make it harder though to have separation? If the character is like you, then you kind of become an exaggerated version of yourself. Is it ever hard to rein it back in then?
No, I think it's a little bit easier, because I think otherwise when I was playing Carmel, I would end up being more like Carmel. I would found it harder to switch off from that because I was hurt all the time. I think if you're playing somebody who's like you, but then got another layer on top, you can easily take that layer off and be you. I do think it's easier to, especially in soap, I think it's easier to sustain.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense, yeah.
I would love to know, you said on your Instagram when you announced that you were in Coronation Street that you've had this on your vision board for 10 years, and I'm big into vision boards. Things have happened for me that I've put on them. So I'd love to know, how long has that been a practice for you, and how do you think it works?
So when I really look back, and when I've started doing more vision board work and coaching, I've realised I've done it from a child, but I've done it more through my mind. So I've wanted something and I've envisioned it in my head, and then it kind of happened. Like Hollyoaks, for instance, I wanted to be in Hollyoaks, so I made it happen. It's not like I just thought about it and it actually, like, I just appeared in it one day. I thought about it. I was like, I want to be in Hollyoaks. Okay, how can I position myself to get an audition for that job? How can I work on my craft by going to acting classes, then getting an agent? So I think using vision boards is incredible, because you can see it every day, but you've also got to take that action towards it. Mm-hmm. So I've done the same with Coronation Street, but like, I've auditioned 3 times and not got the job at Corrie, and then I got this one. So it's about, like, sometimes you just got to keep going. So, but I love vision boards. I think they're so powerful, and I think they give you some direction in life and full intention of where you want to go.
I think there is there's this danger in this kind of world sometimes about manifesting, and how if you just sort of think about it and dream about it, it's going to come into your life, and the kind of action is missed out a lot of the time.
And that's where I'm kind of really specific with my clients and my members. It's like, you've got to take the action. Things don't just come to you. If you want it, you've got to set the intention, and then you've got to figure out how you're going to get there.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about the tools you use as part of, not recovery, recovery is the wrong word, but as part of the processing after Coronation Street and finding yourself again. So yoga is one tool.
Yes.
Hypnotherapy was another one. What else was there and how did it take you into coaching?
So meditation. So I built Mind and Wellness. So it's an online platform of elements of yoga, all pre-recorded, and we have live class as well. So yoga, meditation, we have sound healing on it. We have like kind of affirmation work. So everything's on there and they're the things I use. But what I say to all my clients and members, it's about you creating your own toolbox. Mm-hmm. So for me, that's what I love. I know if I'm going to go and do a job, I need to I need to meditate daily anyway and connect to my breath and regulate my nervous system. That helps me with everything else I do in life. Mm-hmm. But some people, it might not be meditation for them. It might be sound healing. It might be just getting out in nature for a walk. It might be listening to an audiobook or whatever it is. I think you've got to find what works for you and creating habits, like daily habits, your morning routine, your evening routine, and helping what helps you. Because what I like might not be what you like and vice versa. So yeah, they're the things that have helped me. For some reason with yoga, I find it, and the way I teach it now, it's very somatic. So it's about whatever emotion we've got trapped in our body, we can release that. And that's the way I teach it now through my platform. Every week we get on a Saturday morning, whatever week we've had, we can release it through movement.
Mm. And how do you facilitate that release? Because I guess there is, how would I describe it? So I've been to classes where you might explore the emotion you're feeling, but I've also been to classes where they almost insert the emotion inside you, in a sense. Like they tell you what you should be feeling,
yeah.
And then you have to then deal with that. Like, we're going to focus on our internal anger today. Let's consider that person that pushed in front of you in a queue, or that person that hurt you, the child, and let's work through that.
Yeah, and
do you kind of facilitate that?
When I first started teaching yoga, mine were like workouts. It was such an Ashtanga practice. Now it is literally between like a yin and a restorative and a little flow. And I always say to them, like, I'm not here to tell you what to do. This is your practice. It's your mat. You do what works for you. But when you are in a posture, if there is something coming up for you, and half the time, sometimes it might be a memory, it might be emotion, you let it go whichever way feels good for you, and you're in a safe environment if you need to let it go. And, you know, use that through breath. If people want to, you know, let it out through tears, let it out. Like
any screams?
No, screams I haven't had much screams.
That happens in forest yoga. In forest yoga, there are like, and not in all forest yoga classes, but like whales.
It's a good way to release sound.
Yeah, totally. Like, you know, I've had tears and that, but I just think, and now obviously it is harder in a class, in a group, and I do teach in person still, but that's why I did, you know, obviously we had lockdown, so that's why everything was online, but that's why I kept the online going, because I say, create your own sacred space at home, like get your mat out, and then if you are doing a practice with me, if you want to cry, if you want to scream, you're on mute. Do what you want to do that you need to do in your practice. And I always say, it is your practice. I'm not here to tell you to hit these postures. And, you know, I know other yoga teachers are like that, but the way I've developed as a teacher, it is more somatic yoga and releasement of emotion.
Yeah, and you don't need to be everything to everyone. Like I often say to people, I have a few teachers that offer you something slightly different. I go to that class for that reason, that class for another reason.
Exactly.
And in terms of like online yoga, I think it's real, because we've got an online platform as well. And a lot of people come to all my classes that try yoga are live streams. And certainly there is massive value of being in a room with people and the community aspect of it, and the fact you're not hearing your children or looking at something broken in your house.
Yeah.
But that is a real nice benefit of online, is that you have the space to tailor the practice slightly. You can pause and just be in the pose for longer. You can cry, as you say. You can do it in your underwear if you want, or whatever that might be.
Like, I did last Saturday morning in pyjamas, because I was like, I'm not going to lie. I was like, I'm even struggling getting up on a Saturday morning after a week. Well, let's just change it to pyjama yoga. We all roll out of bed, get on our mat, no makeup. And I honestly think it really helps people because, you know, we know what the yoga world is like. Sometimes you have gone to classes and gone, I'm never going to go back because I can't do that. Mm. And I want everyone to try yoga because I think it's so beneficial for everybody and everyone can do it. Mm-hmm. But like you said, you've got to find your right teacher that works for you.
Did you find at the beginning that the people that came to your class were fans and they weren't actually in it for the yoga? They were just fans of you that wanted kind of some in-person connection with yoga?
I've had one fan that came in, but not really, no. Like,
really?
Yeah, everyone's just always been quite cool about it. And that's what I quite liked because I get it. You know, I do get it. You walk in and you might have seen me on TV for 10 years, but it's like, and you are a bit like, oh, at first, but I'm just me. I'm just Gemma, you know, and that's, I think then people, I've got friends with people and then they just come back to your classes. And I think the more I learned to just be me, the more people felt more comfortable around me.
At the beginning, did you feel that, because obviously you're an actress, did you feel, and there is a performative quality to when you are a teacher, you do in to an extent have to put on a performance. Did you feel that you were performing at the beginning and then you slowly became more and more yourself as your practice developed?
Yes, I do. But I think this is maybe why I like to teach yoga, because it is a little bit of, you're in that performance state, like it gives you that same feeling. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Especially when you're in big groups and you're, you know, you're teaching in a bigger space, like we're saying with Happy Place, like that to me, it gives me that same feeling as I'd get if I was on stage as well. Mm. Like, it, I don't know what it is. It's, I think maybe that's why I gravitated towards like teaching yoga, as, you know, it was a passion of mine, and everything I've done in life as a job, it's always been a passion, and then I've converted it into a job. So yeah, I think at first it was a bit more like a performance and now it's more me.
Have you ever done a job that you've hated?
I don't think I've hated. I worked as a PT for a while, so I did yoga, and then I wanted to learn more about the body, so I went and did my personal training qualification and I worked in a gym, and that I didn't like, because I felt it was just so one-dimensional, and I felt like in the fitness industry, it's just like, you only have to do this. You only have to lift, or you only do CrossFit, and they weren't open to like, okay, doing weightlifting and doing some yoga and maybe doing a spin class. I found it very one-dimensional. I felt like I was kind of talking to like the brick wall half the time. So I met some incredible clients that are clients now and who've like over to Mind and Wellness or become friends as well. I met some amazing people through that, through friends, but working in a gym environment, I didn't like at all.
And is it a bit weird as well, the it's quite salesy, isn't it, as well? Now, that's what I could never do. I'm awful at that. I'm awful at approaching people in every sense, like in terms of chatting people up, etc. Like,
when did you do that?
Well, I haven't. I literally never chatted anyone up in my life. That, thank God for online dating, because it meant that I could meet people having got that bit out of the way. But that element of things, you don't have to do that in yoga, do you? In theory, there is no sales element. There's a bit of, in it, if there is, it feels kind of dirty. Whereas at the PT, you just have to be walking around people saying, well, are you aware that you could do that a little bit better? I can help you.
Yeah, it just wasn't my vibe at all. And I'm just like, I like fitness, but I think everyone should be able to decide what they want to do. And it shouldn't be like, well, you can't. Like, I think I had a conversation where like, yoga's no good for people. I was just like, oh, don't even get me started on that. Do we really want to go into this debate? So, you know, that's a sort of kind of, and I feel like it's still, you know, you see fitness online and it can be so, people are so like, this is the only way to do something. And I think you've got to, I think with everything, you've got to step back and appreciate every different modality and just take from it what you want.
But moderation doesn't have a draw, does it, on social media? To get likes on a post, you need to say, this is an amazing way. This is what you need to do. This will solve your back pain, or this is awful. And there is no room for that middle ground. It's not, well, it isn't boring if we care, but it just doesn't work with the algorithm so much. So on that note, like, how do you find social media?
So I actually love social media. Like, obviously, it does have its downside, but I have created a community from social media. So the people in my community, I didn't know them before I started teaching online and, you know, in lockdown, and a lot of them now come to my retreats. So I do love social media, but I think you've just got to do what's right for you on it and just be as true to yourself on the platform. But yeah, no, I do. I like it after this week because I've had so many nice comments. So it was like everyone was just so lovely. I was just like, you know, there is a lovely community out there and lovely, lovely people. Mm. So yeah, I've been lucky with it.
Do you find that Instagram's a bit different to others? I don't know what other ones you're on, but like Instagram generally is relatively friendly.
Yes.
And I experienced recently, because I don't do loads on Facebook, but a brand I was working with, they kind of not reposted it, but they boosted it somehow. So it appeared on Facebook also. And just like no positive comments, just like weird bloke saying, oh, I bet he takes it up the bum. And like, just like, because it was about gut health. And just like the most
productive.
It was just four lads making comments like that, and yeah, that was Facebook. And I feel that Facebook generally is just like nastier people.
I don't really. I bring everyone. If anyone goes into the Facebook and goes, oh, I was like, no, come over to Instagram. I really like Instagram. And I think that's the thing. I think you should pick a platform that works for you, for your business. Even though, you know, people might say, oh, Facebook is good because you can get to more people. Yeah, I think you've just got to do what works for you.
You call yourself an intuitive psychology coach, and I've never heard that before. So would you mind explaining what you think that is?
Yeah, so I've just done my diploma. So it's like the highest qualification you can get in coaching. So I did my coaching beforehand, and then I've done my intuitive psychology coaching with the association. And the difference between it is, so coaching can be very much, let's look at your goals. How do we get there? Mm. When I started to become a coach, what I found with working with clients, it was okay to say, let's see what your goals are. How do we get there? But things were holding them back from their past. And that's why then I became a hypnotherapist, to release stuff from people's past so then they could step forward. So when I kind of came across the Diploma for Intuitive Psychology Association, they mix the modalities together. It's not hypnotherapy, but it's more embodiment work. So it's a lot of closed eyes work, hand to heart work. So our mind might be thinking one thing, but our body and our intuitive and our heart will be saying something else. And it's about trusting that more than what your head is saying. Mm. That make steps forward. And then we do a lot of like inner child work. We will do some unlayering of emotions. So if you are feeling angry, okay, close eyes. What's under anger? It might be sadness. What's under sadness? It might be, you know, it might be like nervousness. So it's about then getting to the root cause of why you are showing up a certain way. So it's about helping with the past to then move forward into the future.
Mm. And once you've uncovered this and you've got to the root, and people then, you know, a light's been shone on why people are blocked and can't move forwards, what's the next step after that for people, or is it different for everyone?
Well, I think once they're aware of the shadow and what is holding them back, and generally it's ourselves that are holding them back, that's always going to show up. But it's not got any power over you anymore. So that's where we alchemize it then. We kind of take those steps forward. It might come up again and you go, oh, here it is again. But no, you're not going to like stop me from making these next steps in my life, because I've made peace with that. I've released it. I can move forward now, and this is the version I want to be.
Mm. A question I get asked a lot is how, because I think when, you know, we grow up being taught how to use our brains and our minds, and this kind of trumps the intuition. We're not really told how to nurture that or tap into it. So a question I get asked a lot in my community is, how can you tell the difference between, you know, your mind's voice telling you to go in this direction, or, you know, that often it's a lot of a more of a quieter voice, isn't it, from your heart speaking? And how do you find that voice? How do you connect with it? You know, the truth.
Yeah. So for me, after doing this diploma recently, it's just practice. It's practice of the closing the eyes down, hand on heart, asking yourself a question. And the first answer will probably be the head. And then it's that then tuning in to what do I really want, asking the question again. And I think the more you do it, the more you practice with it, then you will notice with the steps that you make in life, like it feels easier. It's more in flow. It's like you're not pushing against the tide, because I think sometimes the decisions we make with our mind, we might feel like we are pushing against the tide. Mm. The decisions we make with our intuition, everything should flow nicely. Mm-hmm. So I think that's one way of looking at it. Mm.
Are you personally, do you have any, well, everyone has blocks, but what are the kind of blocks or challenges that you personally feel you are working with or working through at the moment, if you don't mind answering that?
Oh, no, I will actually, because I've just moved through it. I nearly, like, literally I was on the floor before Christmas with the shadow, because I didn't realise it was holding me back. And it was this feeling of not feeling good enough. Mm. And I've had it probably all my life. And I think that's probably why I've been quite an overachiever. And I will push and push and make things happen. But it was all coming from a place of just, the words were, I don't feel good enough. So once I realized that and once I released it and made peace with it, I am, like I say to myself, I am good enough. It doesn't matter what job I've got, you know, who I am, I am good enough, and I can step forward in that version of me. So it's still there and I know it's there, but I know that's not truly me. Mm. So, yeah.
Where does that come from? So many people seem to have this mental block. I'm not good enough. I'm not enough. And where does it come from?
I just think most of the time when I work with clients and myself, it's childhood. Mm. It's in a child, like, you think, like, we have the beliefs. And when you look at it in hypnotherapy terms, we run on programs. So half the programs that are running through us could be our parents, our mum, our teacher. It could be something as simple as when you were younger, you stood up and you stuttered over your words when you had to speak out and a teacher told you off or something. Mm. Then you made that belief in your head, I'm not good enough to do this. So then that's stuck with you and that's on repeat. So, you know, our programs, they're like CDs, and it just kind of keeps going until you go in and you realize what's going on in the subconscious mind and you release it. Mm-hmm. And that can be done through embodiment work or hypnotherapy work. But I do truly believe it is from childhood. Mm.
This is the stuff we should be taught in school, really, isn't it? Not maths.
Hopefully. I was like, it's took me 10 years between 30 and 40 to learn all this. Like, if we can teach our younger generation this, there'll be so much more confidence, so much, you know, they can. But I always think, are we not taught it because once we learn it, we are powerful and we don't need that external validation. We can make choices and make steps because we fully trust ourselves.
Yeah, that's a rabbit hole, isn't it?
How would one teach it, though? Like, how does one go about teaching that to young people?
Well, I think, first of all, teaching children how to connect with their intuition, teaching children how to meditate, teaching children how to release emotion through movement. Mm-hmm. You know, if you, like, I don't have children, so I can't comment too much, but children are very on now. Mm-hmm. And I was the same when I was a child, like, there's not, like, if they're on school holidays, I know, you know, some people I know have got children, they're taking them out every day to be on. Now, when children or people are on all the time, they're not sitting in quietness and connecting to themselves and their inner voice. So maybe we just need to help children to, like, slow down and just be still and be a bit, you know, connect to the breath. I don't know. You've got a child.
And be bored, I think.
Yeah,
really
I was
important.
Literally about to say bored, that. Yeah,
like, bored doesn't almost exist anymore. It's just to say, like, I try and make a conscious effort where possible. If I'm going on a walk around London or on the tube, where possible, I try to just sit and just watch people and let myself be bored and let my mind wander. And that often doesn't exist. And we're taking little steps. Like, do you know Calm, the meditation app?
Yes.
There's these little things you can get for kids called Tonys, which are like a box, which is a speaker, and there's characters you can get, and you put the characters on it, and it tells a story or does songs. You know, there's like Spider-Man, and we got one by Calm, which is, what's it called? The Pirate.
The Pirate. I don't know.
It's got a name. And Gary? It's just like Pirate, and then he teaches like meditation, but, and like breath work, but in a piratey way. Like, let the seas rage through you, and And it's incredible. Like, it's quite relaxing, isn't it? And it's only like minute exercises. And that's designed for a 3 or 4 year old.
Brilliant. And I think that's what children need. Like, if we teach them younger, then, like, you know, I got to a point where my anxiety was so bad, I didn't even know how to connect with my breath because I'd never been taught it.
Mm.
But if we teach younger, like, that's a tool that they've got for the rest of their life, and it's a daily practice.
I got a little boy even. So we've never taught him yoga. We've never, like, said anything about yoga to him particularly. And Holly was doing a yoga class of the day, and it was on a wine estate. So I was walking around the wine estate with a baby, then brought him in at the end and be like, oh, you're in Shavasana, shush. And then he went, Mummy, yoga, Matt. Mummy, yoga. I was like, how do you know that?
Well, he does it at nursery.
And then I realised, well, he's doing it at nursery. And he must have done it to such an extent that he now identifies as like, that's a yoga mat and Mommy's doing yoga on the yoga mat. And he's one and a half.
I love that. I love hearing children talking about like yoga or doing it in nursery or schools, because I think it's just so important. I really think it's so important to instill them, because then that will be their programme. That will be it'll be second nature to them.
And hopefully it'll get them through the challenges of social media and the internet. Oh, that worries me.
There's I forget the name of the guy. He's written a few books on culture and psychology. His most recent one is all about that, like the fact that childhoods are being ruined by smartphones and how we can do about that. And carry on.
This Kate, I think she was on BBC, she used to be a presenter on BBC, she's become a child psychologist, and she was saying like how much social media is basically killing our children's brains.
And it's hard to know what to do. And like there's already schools that ban phones, and often within a week or two. It's this weird thing where most adults and children, if we said to them, would you like to not have social media and not have a phone almost on you all the time? They would say yes. But why do they do it all the time? Part of it could be addiction. Part of it is just because it's like not fear of missing out. But if everyone else is doing it, then you feel you have to do it. And then to some degree in the future, as technology and AI advances, you will actually be missing out commercially if you don't have access to AI and you don't have access to a phone at all times. It's a really hard thing to navigate. And I think for adults, there's kind of no hope. Like if you want to compete to some degree in the future, you're going to need AI connected to your brain or whatever it might be, or Neuralink or whatever.
Scary.
But I think at least for children, we can try and let children be children for as long as possible. And if we can, as a society, make it normal for children not to have smartphones until they're like 16, that'd be the dream.
Yeah, we'll see.
And things can change. Like, you know, it was acceptable to smoke. And now people still smoke, but generally now it's not that common that people smoke. So I think society can change.
I'm on the hope train.
Yeah, I hope it does. I know I'm a little bit addicted to my phone. Like, I'm not lie about it, but I don't know if you feel like it when you run a business through online. It can be hard because you feel like all the time. Like, and it is hard because it takes you out of those moments, the presence and just enjoying life. But we kind of, like, I have an awareness of that where children won't have that awareness. It'll just be all they know if they have it at such a young age.
And as adults, there's little things we can do to help us. Like yesterday, it was kind of an accident, but my phone died and I just had my watch with me. So I knew I could still take calls and do like text messages as needed. But it was just so liberating to just not have the phone at all and it just be dead in my bag as a brick. That was really wonderful. And I'm a big fan of actually having cameras that aren't camera phones, but cameras.
Yeah.
So when you go to an event, et cetera, you take photos with that, not a phone, because then you pick up your phone out of your pocket and you're looking through other stuff. So there's little things we can do, aren't there?
And I never thought of that, actually, because you don't think of just having cameras now. Think everything on your phone, isn't it? But you might, like, sometimes I go on my phone to do something and I've then gone down a rabbit hole of
20
something.
Minutes later, and all you were doing was checking the time.
So, it is, I think, like with our community, we did a thing last month where we're like, we all put our phone on, like, when the apps go down, because I do it from 9 o'clock. And then I put my phone in another room. But then I went and got one of the Whoops, and then you have to have your phone next to you for it to...
Oh, it doesn't just log it?
No, it's like it has to be next to me. So now I literally put it in the drawer next to my bed, but I don't like it in the room when I go to sleep. So I was just putting it downstairs, but it wasn't logging it.
I don't understand that, because I would have thought, and I know vaguely what whoops are, but like, you're supposed to be able to take them on like runs and stuff and go swimming in them.
Maybe I've been taking it, but when the first day it was like it didn't get my sleep data. So I was like, but I've noticed even that, like not putting it in the other room, because I put it in my utility room on charge, shut the door at 9 o'clock and not look at it until the next day.
How do you find psychologically seeing your sleep data affects you? Because part, you know, in some sense, you might think, well, okay, it's good that I can see my sleep data, I can do what I can to improve it. But maybe it gets to a point where, like, there's nothing you can do to improve it. Like, for us, and, you know, being parents of a young one, like, it might tell me, like, oh, you had a crap night's sleep. And, oh, well, that's because my baby woke up. And so there's, to some degree, seeing sleep data can actually make you feel guilty and make you then sleep worse.
Well, that was some of the comments that I got back when I said I'm thinking of getting one, but... For me, I do sleep a lot, so I'm always in restorative. They're like, maybe we can get you today. And I'm like, oh, okay, I'll just be today. I'll just cuddle my dogs all day. So I'm like, I need to start moving a little bit more with it. But yeah, it's interesting because I just got it because I was feeling tired. And to be honest, when I know I've had a good sleep, it actually makes me go, oh, actually, I'm all right. I can move a bit more. So it's kind of been quite positive for me. Mm. But I can imagine if you've got a child and you're up all night, yeah, it won't be. It'll be nice to read that every morning.
Or if you're just data obsessed and you like it's because some people really get it into their head.
Oh, aren't they? I'm not that data. I just look at it and go, yeah, I've had enough sleep. I can do this today.
Should we have one last question?
Yeah.
Do you have anything on your vision board for another 10 years time away?
You know what? It's really hard because I've just achieved like this massive goal. I'm like, what's next?
Human.
So yeah, I think I need to kind of look at what I do want next and what I want to achieve. But I'm really sitting in the moment of just being really quick with everything.
Yeah.
The only thing I'd love to do is build mind and wellness more, help more women to stand in the power, to have more wellness, to regulate their nervous system, to work with more women through coaching and hypnotherapy. And just spread it out there. Like I do quite a lot of corporate world in businesses, because I think it's so important for people to know how to regulate their nervous system and not be in high stress. Like we can live a better life. And I'm just really passionate about that, to help people.
So this is all going to, even though you're now on like got a full-time job again, more than a full-time job, all of this is still going to continue?
Well, it's two episodes at the moment, so we'll see what happens. So yeah, I am very ready to go back to acting. So if it's either here or other jobs, I'm ready for it. And yeah, I will still be running Mind and Wellness. We've got another membership level coming up. In the next couple of months, and I'm just launching a 3-month group coaching program as well.
Oh, nice.
I'm very passionate, and I want to keep running it all alongside my acting career as well.
So what's your website to find that platform?
At mindandwellness.co.uk.
Cool. So, awesome. Yeah. And is there anything you want to leave our guests with? Whether that be just some links, whether that be a motivational quote, anything on your mind at the moment?
Just that, you know, we all have our own power and we all have our answers within us. We don't need external validation. We just need to slow down sometimes, connect to ourselves and breathe. I think that's the most important thing, connect to our breath.
Thank you so much for joining.
Thank you so much, Gemma.
Thank you so much. I've loved it. Honestly, unbalanced.